The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. After losing his father and suffering a life-altering car accident, Michael Phillips turned to selling drugs. On the run from the police, Michael had to make a decision.
And so I had to roll my window down and flag everybody down and ask, I mean, literally stopping traffic, asking everybody to get over because I was in the wrong lane, but I needed to make a right turn. Wow. And I turned around that day and I turned myself in, not knowing what the consequences was going to be.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. Sheila Walsh is with me as always. And I am so excited because today we have that story of what God wants to do in everyone's life, that story of redemption, that story of hope. And maybe you need that. Maybe someone that you care about needs that. You're just going to be inspired today. So, Michael Phillips, we are thrilled to have you on Life Today.
What an amazing honor and delight to be on Life Today. It is a thrill of mine to be here. So excited.
I love your title. The book is called Wrong Lanes Have Right Turns. Brilliant, brilliant title. Talk to us about the cover.
This cover is amazing. This, if I could really tell you the story of this 12-year-old boy on this cover, you might not believe it, but it's me at 12 years old. 6 months removed from my father's passing.
Wow.
I was angry, lost, hopeless, disoriented in ways I can't even really articulate. And this little boy decided that he didn't want anything to do with church, God, in any capacity whatsoever. I was a very angry young man. And so this is me deciding to go down to the one of the worst corners and play dice and to start a life of dipping my toe and foot in the criminal element of life.
So that was not a safe thing to do in that area?
No.
So much I know.
Playing dice on the corner is risky any day of the week at any time.
See, I grew up in Scotland. We don't do that.
Right. Yeah.
So give us a little more of the background there, because you weren't at church that day.
No. So my mother dragged me to church. It's the first time I ever yelled at my mother. Ever yelled, just because I told her I'm not going down to that place, because it reminded me so much of my father's death. Mm. And my father was a preacher, so to give context, he was a preacher. I'm a fourth generation preacher that vowed he would never preach. How you like that? but here I am today. So my father had just passed suddenly, and I couldn't reconcile in my mind, how could this be?
Sure.
And so that made me very angry at God. So going to church was a daily reminder of that pain. And so my mother dragged me down to church that day, and I told her I didn't want to go. I actually cursed at my mom, which I still feel horrible about today. She has no problem reminding me about it, but it was terrible. And so they're inside the church, and I'm outside the church on the corner playing dice.
So that was the beginning of a trajectory. Take us through some of that arc.
It was. It was the beginning of a trajectory. I stole my first car that year.
At 12?
At 12. I started selling drugs at 12. I ran the streets like it was nobody's business. I did so many things at a very young age that it's really hard to fathom, but I did it. And the only thing that rescued me from going all the way in was I was an athlete. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of helped me to have some semblance of normalcy and structure that stopped me from going all the way there. However, that didn't last.
What happened?
So when I was 17 years old, I got a full scholarship to a Division I school to play basketball and football, actually. But I chose basketball because I figured I could do it longer. Plus, my sweet mate was 6'6", 270 pounds, and he was the tight end. So I figured I might
I'm safer in basketball.
I might be okay better over here on the court. And I went home for a weekend visit. Actually didn't wind up playing in college because on this weekend visit, after hanging out with some friends, the individual that was driving the car fell asleep behind the wheel. And I woke up in the hospital. My lower torso was caught underneath of the dash of the car. My upper torso went through the windshield of the car.
Oh, gosh.
And when I became conscious, I was in the hospital, strapped to a board, and I couldn't feel anything. They told me I would never walk again.
Wow.
Certainly never play again. And I was devastated, completely. I thought my life was destroyed because basketball was going to be my passport to the world. And everything that I went through up until that time had conditioned me to think, this is the only way I can make a life. This is the only way I can be somebody. And so now that's gone. And so that took me deeper into my despair, which caused me to make a catastrophic decision for my life that could have been catastrophic. But it was changed. It was subverted. It was altered. My trajectory was totally changed by one decision. One man's decision changed my life forever.
Before we get there, and I love getting there. Yeah. So you now your sports are out, your scholarship, right? Where do you go? Did you turn to God at that point, or
no?
Were you angry at God for that too?
Pain has a counterintuitive process to it that causes you to go down before you can go up.
Wow. Wow.
And that level of pain caused me to go way down. I decided that, okay, since I can't be an athlete, since I won't finish school, I'll just be the best criminal anybody's ever seen. And at 17 years old, some of my friends and I, we just started to really start selling drugs, you know, that sort of thing, all types of different aspects of that world. Which really landed me in the hands of federal officers.
This is in Baltimore, right?
This is in Baltimore during in the mid-90s, height of the crack epidemic.
Yeah.
And we were fully blown all in, all the way.
One of the things I wanted to ask you before we get to that one gentleman and that one question that changed the trajectory of your life, back when you're fully in, when you're in bed at night, or when you're, what's going through your mind?
The first thing that really goes through your mind is that you don't belong there. You know, and it's not even subconsciously, you know consciously, this is not the life for me. But you don't know what to do with your pain. The pain that you're not willing to transform, you will ultimately transmit. And if you don't know where to place that pain, if you don't know how to give voice to that pain, where does it go?
Yeah.
And so when you see people doing the things that they do, don't judge the what.
Yeah. Mm.
Find out why.
That's great.
Yeah.
Find out why.
Yeah.
I was in an insurmountable amount of pain that I couldn't give language to.
Yeah.
All of the guys that were with me, all of the people who were buying drugs, and they were every color, every shape, every creed, didn't matter. We were all in pain. There was a woman, she was a nurse, a registered nurse, but she had formed an addiction.
Yeah.
She was very beautiful, and she got to the point where I couldn't recognize her.
Mm. Wow.
She came up to me one day, and I really didn't recognize her. I actually drove her home because I was so concerned for her well-being. Mm-hmm. And I said, we got to get you some help. I mean, think about it. I'm the one doing it.
Wow.
And I'm saying, I got to get you some help.
Right.
And on the way home, I asked her, I said, why are you out here? You had this great job. What are you doing? And she said, we're all addicted to something.
Yeah.
Changed my life forever. She said, mine is just crack. Yours is power.
Whoa. Wow. Perceptive.
And I said, oh my, I never heard anybody articulate that before. Mm. That this is my addiction.
Wow.
This is how I'm voicing my pain.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
By having this power over painful people.
Mm.
Gosh.
And it totally, totally changed my perspective on what I was doing.
We've got to get to that one guy.
Yeah, well.
That one question. We've got to get there.
Until the Fed stepped in and showed they had more power than you.
Right, exactly.
Talk us through that.
Yeah, so the whole thing got shut down. Don't have time to go through the whole story, but the whole thing got shut down, as those things do. And federal officers raided my mom's house.
Wow.
When we found out everything was being raided, I went on the run because I said, okay, you know, I'm not going to jail. So here I am in my car, headed to Miami. My mom calls me on a Nextel two-way. This is how far we're going.
Right.
She calls me on a Nextel two-way, and she said, only like a mother can. Baby, what are you doing? I said, Mama, I can't talk right now. I'll call you when I get to where I'm going. I didn't know if our house was bugged. I didn't know what was going on. And she says, baby, whatever you're facing, we can face together.
Wow.
Come on home.
Wow.
So I got in my car. Here I am sitting in my car. I'll never forget it. I'm sitting in my car. My gun is on the seat. I'm sitting in the car, and I'm going, come on, man, just get to Miami. You'll be fine. You can figure it out from there. I get in my car, and I'm on I-95 going south. But I'm like in Richmond, Virginia. You can either go down to Virginia Beach or you can keep going down. It's a very busy intersection. And at that busy intersection, I made a decision. I said, you need to turn around and you need to turn yourself in.
Wow.
And I was in the wrong lane at this very busy intersection. And there was no way I could turn around. And if I would have kept going, I would have kept going. And so I had to roll my window down and flag everybody down and literally stopping traffic, asking everybody to get over because I was in the wrong lane, but I needed to make a right turn.
That's the title of the book.
That's the title of the book, Wrong Lanes Have Right Turns.
Wow.
And I turned around that day and I turned myself in, not knowing what the consequences was going to be, because consequences are more powerful than decisions.
Why am I thinking that?
We study decisions, but study consequences. And if you study consequences, you'll make a better decision.
That's really good.
You'll make a better decision. And that decision to turn myself in was a powerful consequence in my life.
So you end up in front of a judge.
I end up in front of a judge after doing 6 months of what they call pre-trial detention. Here I am, thinking, okay, I'll turn myself in. I have no record. I'm not a violent offender. I don't even know what they're coming after me for. So first, let's find that out, right? And so I find out that I have a RICO charge, which is racketeering charge. I'm facing 30 years.
Wow.
Right? And it's serious. And so they had my bail so high that I couldn't post bail. So now you have to wait until your trial, okay? And they do that in pretrial detention. They put me in this place called The Cut, which is like San Quentin, basically.
Jeez.
Yikes.
I'm in a 23/7 cell, which means I can only come out an hour a day.
Ooh.
And you'll never forget the sound of a prison door shutting. There's an eerie clank that echoes and reverberates around the cinder block walls that lets you know it's over.
Yeah.
And I thought that my destiny was going to be written on those concrete floors and cinder block walls. But on a Sunday, which doesn't happen, they open that door, guard tells me to come on, he puts the cuffs on me, takes me to a van. I get in the van, I'm asking him, what's going on? Where are you taking me? What's happening? Because I don't know, I don't know I'm about to catch a beating. I don't know what's about to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I get to a federal building and they take me into the judge's chambers and he sits down in front of me. And he says, son, would you like to go to jail or would you like to go to school?
I've never heard of anything like that.
Yeah. And I said, well, let me think. I said, I would like to go to school. And he began to describe this program that this gentleman had that was acquainted with Oral Roberts University, that they wanted to put me in. It was a program for adjudicated youth. If you had the potential to go to college or were already in college, that you could go to school rather than going to prison. The prosecutor thought I was a pawn because I was so young. So I was the little fish that they were going to throw back to get to the big fish.
Yeah.
And thought that I was inconsequential to their investigation.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful for that. To that.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful today for that. And that was the one man that changed my life's trajectory by offering me that opportunity to go to school rather than to go to jail.
Tell us, so you go to ORU and everything's perfect, right?
No. No, because you can change your location, but if you don't change your mindset, it doesn't matter.
So true.
It doesn't matter if you move to California or to Texas or to New York. If you're the same, you're going to be the same in those places. Mm-hmm. And I was still the same, still trying to figure out, what do I do with this pain? And it was culture shock to me. Okay, I'm an East Coast city guy in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I had no reference for what I was going into. I really didn't. And more importantly, I didn't want to mess anybody else's life up. Mm-hmm. So I just stayed to myself. I stayed mostly off campus, but still was doing some of those same things I was doing back home.
With the drugs? Until when?
Until Spring Revival.
Spring Revival.
Spring Revival, which was, if you are an ORU alum, you understand what I'm talking about. So Spring Revival, it's mandatory. You had to go.
Yep.
Right? And they told me, you have to be there, you have to go. And I was a very belligerent young man. I had a very difficult time with authority. If you tell me this, I'm going to do the opposite thing. And so they said, but you have to go. You're not going to be able to get your grades if you don't attend. So here's what I decided to do. I never did drugs, only sold them. I hardly ever drank because I wanted to be sober of mind to control my environment.
Mm-hmm, the power.
But this is how bad it was for me to go to church. I didn't want to go so bad that I decided that day, I'm going to smoke weed, which I did, was smoke five what we call blunts.
Yeah, that's a bit.
It's a lot. I drank a fifth of Grey Goose vodka.
Oh, goodness.
And then I chased that with a half a case of Budweiser with some friends.
Wow.
To go to Spring Revival?
To go to Spring Revival. And I said, I want to be as numb as I possibly can.
Goodness.
So that I don't feel God's presence.
Wow.
How'd that work out for you?
It did. They started singing a song, How Great Thou Art. This feeling came over me that I knew. I knew God's presence. I'm a fourth generation preacher. I grew up in church. My father used to sing that song, playing the organ. And when they started singing, all that pain, all of that trauma that went unacknowledged, God acknowledged it that day.
Wow.
Because when trauma goes unacknowledged, tragedy goes uninterrupted. So my life would have been a tragedy unless God interrupted this trauma.
Wow.
And he did it through a song.
Wow.
And the presence of God came over me. I was sober. I was crying.
Wow.
And I was so terrified, I ran out of the chapel while they were singing. Up the middle aisle, by the way, because I'm on the third row.
Oh, wow.
Okay? And I ran back to my dorm room. I slammed the door just to escape God's presence, but I couldn't. I picked up the phone. I called my mom, and I'm just crying and bawling, and she hung up on me. She said, oh, baby, God's dealing with you, and she hung up the phone. And then it was just me and the presence of God in that room. I got down on my knees. I said, God, I give you my life.
Wow.
I was 19 years old. Turns out I was in that room for 3 days.
You were unaware of the passing of time?
I thought it was 30 minutes. My RA knocked on the door, and they thought I had, like, OD'd or something, or was dead. And he said, man, your whole countenance has changed. What happened? What's going on? And I shared my testimony for the first time.
Wow.
I gave my first altar call.
Oh, my gosh.
At that moment. And I have been preaching the gospel ever since.
Beautiful.
As you can probably tell, there's a lot more to this story, and you're going to want to read it in Wrong Lanes Have Right Turns. And I'm going to tell you how you can get hold of your very own copy of this book. It's an amazing, let me tell you what Bishop Jake said, a heart-wrenching and triumphant story that will change lives. And we'd like to ask you if you would help us change some lives right now. Would you watch this?
Waterborne illness is a killer that knows no boundaries. The death of a child is the tragic result of having no choice but to drink contaminated water. Miriam lives in a shack in Central America. She had to watch her son die in her arms because the only water source she has is a contaminated river. In South Asia, the journey these women make each day to collect water is filled with potential danger. Danger not from the rough terrain, but from their water source that causes sickness and all too often, the death of a child. Pitch is a young mother from a small village in Cambodia. She knows the water she collects is filled with contaminants, but she has no other option. One of her children has already died, and the other one is sick. Thousands of miles away in drought-stricken Angola, the rural clinics cannot keep up with the number of children dying from water-borne diseases.
I am by a water source that is so typical of water sources all over the world. The water is contaminated. We know for a fact in this area, disease is killing entire families and many children. Would you be an answer to the need of so many people right here and respond by giving them clean water? Thank you so much for doing it.
You know, there's something about when God has rescued you, when God has impacted your life, it's like, I think it's like he washes your eyes again and suddenly you see things you would have missed. And that was my experience the first time that I went to Angola and saw, wept with mothers who gave me the privilege, it's hard to know the word, of walking with them so they could show me where they buried their children. And the thing that was so clear to me was this woman beside me, she's just me. We were just born in different countries. We're both mothers. And I can't imagine what it would be like to be, to have your only choice is to give your child water that you know has already killed one of your other children. But until we are able to make an impact and drill a water well in their village, they have no choice. And I've seen the difference. I mean, I've gone to the villages where there's nothing. And these hand-dug wells, 6 feet down, filthy. I mean, horrible water. And then the next day, I actually went to a village where there was Life Outreach International. It was something that you'd helped us drill. And the difference is literally death and life. And Randy, we've made a commitment this year to drill 350 additional new wells that will change the lives of so many people.
It will, and you're right, we've seen it. We've seen how simple it is to go into a village where there's death and bring life. And I have to tell you, I have knelt down beside the graves that were short graves because they were children's graves. And when you stand up from there, there's something inside you that says this is wrong, but we can make it right. This doesn't have to be this way, but we have to do something. And I got to tell you, I stood right there and I said, I will never shy away from asking our partners who love people around the world. They want to do something in the name of Jesus Christ to impact others. I will never hesitate to ask them to partner with us, to drill water wells, to deliver clean drinking water to people who might die otherwise. It's very simple. A gift of $144 right now will help provide clean drinking water for an average of a lifetime for 30 people. Many of you can do that right now. And I just ask you to go to the phones or go online and do it right now. Some of you, a gift of $48 is what you can do. That will provide clean drinking water for 10 people, 10 lives impacted. Some of you can give an entire well. A gift of $4,800. That's the average cost of the wells. We do these 350 wells in 20 nations around the world. Some of you can make that gift or more. Whatever you can do, I am just asking you to reach out today and make a difference by providing clean drinking water, which will save lives. So go to the phone, go online right now. Do it. I pray you'll do it right this second and make the best gift you can. You will be giving water for life.
Waterborne illness is a killer that strikes the most vulnerable. For many impoverished families, the death of a child is the tragic result of having no choice but to drink contaminated water. But with your help, they won't have to make this choice ever again. Mission Water for Life provides clean, fresh drinking water for thousands of children and their families, giving them a life free from the fear of death. With your gift today, you can help drill and establish 350 water wells this year. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 children. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10. $72 will provide for 15. And $144 will help provide life-giving water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift, we'll send you Bible Promises for Life, the ultimate handbook to everything God guarantees you in His Word, and a powerful resource that will give you the confidence to face life's troubles. With your gift of $100 or more, please request the I Will Give You Rest Throw. It's a reminder of our Savior's promise of rest to those who trust in His grace and love. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well. And you may request our new inspiring bronze sculpture, Let the Children Come. Please call, write, or make your gift online.
Go online or go to the phone, give the best gift you can, and thank you for saving lives. And when you do, ask for Michael's book, because there's so much more here.
You know, this little boy, you at 12, diced outside, you won't go in the church. How did that story end?
That's to bring it full circle, 17 years later, I bought that exact building and I started my church.
Wow.
In that building.
Wow.
From the corner of playing dice to pastoring thousands of people in that very same building.
Amazing. Wow, what a story of redemption.
It is, and I love it. Thank you so much for watching. And Michael, thank you for being here and sharing your story.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We'll see you again next time.
You won't let go unless you are totally convinced that you will be caught.
Sheila Walsh, tomorrow. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.